Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to another special edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Happy New Year's Eve. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We are in the fifth of six installments of our special year-end awards, looking at the best, worst, and most of the political year that was 2013. And, Jim, we start with most underreported story of 2013.
A whole bunch of nominations in this category, but I'm going to go with a particular aspect of the Obamacare story. I think, by the way, it is indisputable that the coverage of Obamacare before the official launch in October, going all the way back to passage back in 2009, 2010, was embarrassingly insufficient. Lots of us were saying, no, you're not going to be able to keep your plan. No, you're not going to be able to keep your doctor. No, the idea of a $2,500 reduction in premiums for every American family is magic unicorn talk. And, you know, most of us were dismissed and seen as negative Nellies and all that stuff. What I'm going to say is the most underreported story has actually gotten a little bit of attention in these last few weeks. And once you see this, you're like, oh my goodness, how has this not been a major issue from the beginning? Obamacare's employer mandate says that any employer with 50 or more full-time employees must provide health insurance to your workers. And if you don't, you get a penalty of $2,000 for every worker beyond 30. In the last couple of months, a couple of people have been asking, well, does this apply to volunteer firefighters? There are apparently about 25,000 stations across the country that are either entirely or mostly made up of volunteer firefighters. So the IRS considers a volunteer as an employee for tax purposes. So does the law apply to volunteer fire departments or not? Well, the IRS hasn't said yet. And this means that if they do, all of a sudden every, you know, volunteer fire department in the country is expected to either provide health insurance, pretty expensive health insurance, for their volunteer firefighters, or pay the fine. Either way, that's going to cost them millions upon millions of dollars that they don't currently have in the budget. So now you're hearing some volunteer fire, you know, the International Association of Firefighters and other firefighter groups saying, well, this might cause some communities to shut down their firehouses. Some people are arguing that's kind of an exaggerated scenario. But one way or another, unless they say, no, you're not considered an employee under the purposes of this tax law, firehouses are going to have several million dollars in new expenses that, you know, God knows where the money's going to come for. You know, localities may have to raise their taxes left and right just to cover the cost of having a functioning firehouse. The IRS could say, no, we don't consider them to do that. What's intriguing is this was raised like maybe 6 weeks ago. And you figure with every firehouse in the country saying, hey, does this apply to us or not? They'd get on the stick and they'd really come out and try to, you know, come up with an answer. No, as of today, still no answer. And members of Congress are asking on behalf of their constituents. Nobody really knows. So here we are, end of the year, and nobody knows how this law affects this 25,000, you know, fire stations across the country. The fact that this hasn't been covered more and is seen as an example of just how what a legislative monstrosity it is makes it my nomination for the most underreported story of 2013.
When you talk about first responders who are not paid very well in most cases, this is potentially going to be a very big hit on them. Great choice. Mine is something we've seen in Syria. We've seen in Egypt this year. We've seen in Africa. We've seen it in places like Afghanistan and Pakistan. But it seems to be really ramping up in a way, but not getting a lot of coverage. And that is the rampant persecution of Christians. We see what the Syrian rebels have done to Christians there. We saw what the Muslim Brotherhood was doing to the Coptic Christians before they got run out by the military. We see stories every once in a while of, you know, 50 people burned to death in Nigeria. And the media generally chalks it up to sectarian unrest, but it's going one way the vast majority of the time. We've seen it to some extent in Pakistan, Afghanistan. It's even happening quite a bit in Iraq, unfortunately, even though there's the new regime in power there. And so obviously domestic news is going to get more attention than international news. Everything can't fit on the front page. But the fact that there hasn't been more attention to this is pretty disturbing.
A very solid choice there. And you can't tell whether that's a reflection of some sort of ideological agenda, newsrooms not being interested in the persecution of Christians overseas, declining foreign bureaus, declining interest in foreign news, or maybe the audience's disinterest. If the media doesn't spotlight these horrific crimes, well, then the perpetrators are going to get away with it, aren't they?
Absolutely. All right. On to most overreported story of the year, Jim.
There's an excellent chance you and I will overlap on this. And Greg, I'm just going to say all the 2016 wrangling. Very little that happens in 2013 is going to actually impact who wins the presidency in 2016. And all the talk about the wrangling and jockeying and who's going to visit Des Moines and who's going up to visit New Hampshire. Look, nothing really gets set in terms of campaigning until 2015 at the earliest. So if you're, you know, a governor, if you're a Republican governor, or if you're a Democratic governor and you're thinking of running for president, a really good thing to do right now is to start lining up your accomplishments. You've actually got a good 2 years to go. So if you want to get a really big bill passed through your state legislature, go do that. If you want to enact some sort of really important change that's going to make things better in your state, if you're in the Senate and you want to introduce a bill and really push for it to get through your chamber, go right ahead. If you're Marco Rubio on the immigration bill, maybe it's not such a great idea. But, you know, do stuff right now. You want to be president? Accumulate a really strong resume. Get things done. Show people you could actually do something in it instead of saying, look, I just wowed them at the Jefferson Jackson dinner in Des Moines last week, or, you know, stuff like that. There's way too much obsession over this. Very little of this stuff is going to matter. The public is not tuned in yet. And I think it says something. You know, it's ironic, somebody who, you know, writes the campaign spot, you know, 365 days a year, getting tired of campaigning. But ultimately, look, you know, we need a governing season in this country, and it's exacerbated by a president who believes in doing campaign-style events morning, noon, and night all throughout the year. But I really yearn for a president and for lawmakers who actually focus on getting things done once in a while. You know, and it doesn't have to be this passing legislation. Try to repeal legislation, all right? Try to eliminate a regulation. Just do something other than run around giving speeches, because there'll be plenty of time to do that. I wouldn't do any of these things until, say, you know, any earlier than the mid-2015 if it was up to me. But obviously it's not. But this is a ludicrously overreported story. Way too much time, airtime, pixels, and ink get devoted to this stuff.
Could not agree more with you there. I think there should be a rule that no campaign cycle should be addressed in any meaningful way until the current campaign cycle is over. So once 2014 is done, sure, then start to speculate a little bit. You'll probably get people jumping in relatively early in 2015, and then you can investigate their backgrounds. But yeah, I mean, to be talking about whether Chris Christie is the front runner at this point, or whether Hillary's got it locked up, we don't even know who else is likely to run here. There's some speculation on some of the names, but that's all it is at this point, is speculation. Any poll, it's just name recognition, and it's just a colossal waste of time, as you said. So very well stated. Mine is probably not the most intellectually stimulating overreported story of the year. It's how the mainstream media has become celebrity reporters. And we saw this a ton this year with Miley Cyrus in particular, and her disgusting performance at the MTV Video Music Awards. Surprise, surprise, there was something shocking at the MTV Video Music Awards. So then it gets a week's worth of coverage. There's breaking news on Kardashian marriages, babies, divorces, whatever. The idea that this stuff matters to anybody other than those people, when we have real issues going on. You've got millions of people losing their health care. You've got a world on fire. You've got an economy that's just bouncing along the bottom, as you like to say. And how these stories somehow merit airtime on supposedly legitimate stations and in legitimate publications is just beyond me.
My philosophy in most of these things, a place for everything and everything in its place. Look, if you want to pick up the People magazine or Us Weekly or, you know, watch TMZ, go right ahead. But keep it out of my Today show. Keep it out of my mainstream news section. You know, at the most, this belongs somewhere in the style section of the paper, not in the front section. Entertainment, yes, you know, it's the toy department of life, and, you know, sports, we all have our diversions, that's fine. But at some point, you got to put the diversions aside and look at the real world and really, you know, more consequential things. And it feels like the news media just doesn't want to do that all that often. Look, yes, I understand real news is depressing, but you know what? It matters. So that's why you have to pay attention, and that's why the overreported story should be less reported and the underreported story should be more reported.
Amen. Amen. Very well said. All right. Last one for today. The best story of the year.
It's not going to surprise anyone. I think it's pretty obvious. The failure of Obamacare. There are many different aspects, many different angles. If I had to summarize it in one sentence, it's that, look, implementing Obamacare means we will end 2013 with more people lacking insurance than we did at the beginning of the year. And the whole purpose of this thing was to try to help the uninsured get insurance. The fact that it is exacerbating the problem it was set up to solve, it's a teachable moment, shall we say, and it may well very turn out to be the story of the decade. Since October 1st, this has shown us that the world works the way we on the right think it works. We're not right about everything. We make mistakes. Our core contention, that big, complicated pieces of legislation often will hit snags, and there will be unforeseen consequences, is a basic fundamental lesson of life that our friends on the left never want to learn, and yet they cannot repeal. You cannot wave it away. You cannot pretend it doesn't exist. It is the truth that government bureaucracies are slow moving. They are often not responsive, and they are more than, with a disturbing regularity, they can be incompetent. We knew this, even if the president didn't, that buying insurance is complicated. Okay, now if you pay attention to the world, this isn't really a shock. Okay, human history is full of examples of centralized planning falling flat on its face, because no government program, no administrator, no president can account for all of the infinite variables of human behavior. Just a short while ago, there was this poll that said 60% of the uninsured haven't even looked at the exchanges. All right, we spend all this money and all this time and all this effort, and we forced old plans to get scrapped, and we go through all of these Herculean changes and grief and aggravation and stress and headaches to help the uninsured, and then the uninsured don't actually go and look at it and aren't buying the insurance. You can lead a horse to water, but you cannot make him drink. You can lead an uninsured person to the really expensive exchange, but you cannot make them buy. And this is a great kind of lesson to those, all the centralized planners, all the people who want to immunitize the eschaton, all the people who want to build utopia on Earth, and realize government cannot do these things successfully. And it is much better to leave people to their own devices, let the free market try those approaches, and let people try to solve these problems themselves, because government is as flawed as any of us, and sometimes even more. End rant.
Well, I knew it had to be a pretty big story to trump the death of Hugo Chavez as your best story for the year. So,
yeah.
That is clearly the biggest story of the year, but given the millions of people harmed by it, I had a hard time calling it the best of the year, but it's clearly the biggest, and I certainly see why you went there. For me, it was such a down year in so many ways. I go with the ouster of Mohamed Morsi in Egypt, and kudos to the people of Egypt for not taking very long to realize that this guy was not what they intended when they went to the streets in an effort to oust Hosni Mubarak back in 2011. Morsi, of course, immediately went for the power grab, rewrote the Constitution, persecuted the Christians, as we talked about earlier, and couldn't deliver on the basic promises of running the government efficiently and providing economic opportunity, which is one of the main problems they had with Mubarak in the first place. And so when they realized things were only getting worse, not better, they went back to the streets. The military honored the will of the people, and hopefully, once everything gets sorted out, they'll have more responsible leadership in Egypt. I have a two-parter, though, and the second one is completely unrelated to Egypt. Earlier in the year, we had issues related to the NSA program and issues related to drones. I'm not even really sure where this comment came from, but it's my favorite moment from the Three Martini Lunch, and it's actually something that happened after we stopped recording that day. Jim had mentioned at one point in the morning jolt that the way that the government was able to find people and track them down and kill them with drones reminded him a lot of Enemy of the State. And so after we stopped recording that day, I pointed out that I thought Enemy of the State was a good movie for him to choose as opposed to some other options. Here's what he said, and we should point out, Jim does not wish harm on anyone. You also did a very smart thing by associating yourself with that movie rather than Eagle Eye with Shia LaBeouf.
Here's the thing. If there was a giant government conspiracy to kill Shia LaBeouf, wouldn't we all be applauding the government? You ruined Indiana Jones! You ruined Transformers! You ruined Wall Street! Three franchises are enough!
No Shia LaBeoufs were harmed in that recording, and Jim, I still laugh every time I hear that.
Thank you, Greg. That's an excellent choice. From being Hollywood's golden boy to this latest incident with plagiarism, like, the entire cover suggests that everyone in the world hates him. So I'm glad the entire world has come to this conclusion. I would point out, once again, we do not want, you know, the government to deploy drones domestically to hunt down and kill Shia LaBeouf. Wing him, maybe. At some point, you know, Shia LaBeouf will probably recognize that being cast as the plucky sidekick to Indiana Jones, Optimus Prime, and Gordon Gekko probably was not the best thing that could have happened to him in life. Perhaps, ultimately, you can get a little too much success early in life and all that stuff. And, oh, by the way, doing the whole no routine just got very tiresome the first time. Tomorrow's the person of the year, right, Greg?
Well, tomorrow's New Year's Day, and then the day after that we'll have our person of the year. That's
okay.
Correct.
Person of the year will not be Shia LaBeouf.
Jim, have a fabulous New Year's, and we'll talk to you again on Thursday.
Looking forward to next year, Greg. See ya.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America. Please join us on Thursday for the next Three Martini Lunch, and have a fabulous New Year's Day.